Welcome to Paris Cocktail Talk, the show brought to you by 52 Martinis, where we talk about cocktailing in the capital and bring you other boozy news from France and beyond, usually with a French touch. In today's episode, we're going to have a lot of fun because we're talking tiki, and it's the first in a two-part series on the subject. Sure, you've been to tiki bars or at least seen them. They're easily recognizable for their South Pacific-inspired touches like rattan furniture, torches, carved masks, conch shells, and flaming volcano drinks. Tiki culture kicked off in 1934 with the opening of Ernest Raymond Beaumont Gant, a.k.a. Don the Beachcomber's eponymous restaurant. And then a few years later, Victor Bergeron, a.k.a. Trader Vic, also adopted the theme for his restaurant, Trader Vic's, which went on to become a worldwide chain. Hot on the heels of these two openings, the 1939 World's Fair also included a Polynesian culture theme. Now, over the decades since its birth, tiki culture may have waxed and waned, but it's never died. And I think, surely part of the reason for its continued popularity is simply, it's just a lot of fun. And to get even more information on the topic, today we'll be talking to Scotty from the wildly popular Pigalle bar Dirty Dick. We'll get his take on tiki. We'll talk to Bai Tiki, who is the only tiki mug artist in France. And we'll talk to Alexandre Gabriel of Pierre Ferrand about their highly sought-after pineapple rum. So let's get to it. All right, so I'm down here at Dirty Dick, which is, if you haven't heard, a very popular, awesome tiki bar, and I'm with one of my favorite personalities in the bar biz, which is Scotty. He's the main man behind the bar here. So thanks, Scotty, for taking
some
time.
How you doing, Forrest? Nice to see you.
I'm good. So I don't want to get too cheesy, but I want to ask you just in general, what does tiki mean to you?
Tiki, what it means to me, I mean, it's a culture. It was first started in the 1930s by a man called Don the Beachcomber, Ernest Raymond Beaumont Gant, which changed his name.
I guess
we know why, because
it, yeah.
It's not a great name. Well, shouldn't say that. But so he started Tiki in the first bar in Hollywood, and it was basically... It's faux tropical is a word that's used thrown around a lot, basically meaning fake tropical. It's ripped off from every culture, from Martinique to Singapore to Fiji, and it's kind of all thrown into a pot and mixed together. So you're having, you know, gods from old mythical gods from Hawaii, from Polynesia, from Jamaica, and it's not a real. It's a pop culture, mm-hmm. and it was the biggest pop culture in the United States until the late 50s, early 60s. It was the biggest trend in the United States at the time. It's got to do with not just with cocktails, with music and... basically, when you go into, for me, if we're talking about a tiki bar, when you go into a tiki bar, it's escapism. I think tiki basically equals escapism. When you go into a tiki bar, it's very low lit. You have very potent rum libations, and you're brought to another. You're brought to the tropics, even though. For instance, we're in the middle of the red light district in Pigalle, but when you come in, you're going to forget that you're even in Paris. You're just going to forget your problems and your worries and just have a great time.
Okay, so Tiki, what was the inspiration behind Dirty Dick? Why'd you go that way?
So the first time that I recollect that I was in Las Vegas. It was a very hot day, as they have lots of those there. And my brother was telling me about a new bar that had just opened up, Frankie's Tiki Room. So yeah, let's go grab a drink. That's a really cool mug that you brought home. I would love to go, you know, get one. So the moment I opened the door to Frankie's, I mean, you're in the desert and you open the door and you're just hit by darkness straight away. And it was the most amazing feeling that I've ever had walking into a bar. And I was like, what is this? I want to know what this is, and I ordered a zombie, and I was just so fascinated by the carvings on the wall. Shag has some pieces in there. He's a tiki artist. And the whole vibe was so intense, and I was just so blown away by this experience. I went straight and I did research on it, and then I just fully became just so blown away by the whole culture, and learning the history from Mr. Jeff Beachbum Berry and reading his books, just blown away, and just really became in love with the whole thing. And then that was my dream, was to open a folk tropical bar in Paris, since I live in Paris, and that was my dream, and it was there, and I kept chasing it, and then finally it happened, because we're sitting in the smoking room
yes,
right now.
Yes, we are. And you didn't do it halfway. Like, you did a really great job with the decor. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about the totem poles, the mural on the wall that was painted by, I can't remember his name, but your friend who doesn't...
David Gonzo is his,
yeah,
his,
exactly.
his name out here. So we wanted to make, me and my business partners, we wanted to make our contribution to the tiki culture in our eyes. This is, the Dirty Dick is from us. So of course we followed, of course we read all the history, and of course we looked at lots of bars and throughout history, but we didn't want to do something exact, we didn't want to copy. Obviously you get inspired by lots of things, but we didn't want to do thatch bamboo on the roof, bamboo every, well, the bar has bamboo around it, but it's a very small addition. It was kind of our contribution in it, and we wanted to make it nice, relaxing, but yet it was, even on my business plan, it couldn't be cheesy in any way for me. I don't like cheesy things, and I didn't want it to be, you know, like cheesy plastic ornaments everywhere, and not that that's not okay, but that's where we came up with what we're doing here. Like, for instance, half the bar is done in a mural. It's something that was done a long time ago, and it's not really done anymore. And it just adds so much ambiance to the bar. There's no TVs. You just stare in. You get lost in the painting.
Yeah.
And you get lost in your own thoughts instead of staring at a TV or whatever. The totem poles. All the designs in here are original. They were all done by David Gonzalez. And then we had them carved by Cheeky Tiki in London. So it was Jamie who did the totem poles. Mm-hmm. They're 350 pounds a piece. And the totem pole isn't a tiki sculpture normally. But we made it into one. I mean, all the normal carvings are Hawaiian or Polynesian carvings. And he's Mexican, and you can even see some of that influence in it, and the totem pole and everything. And we, you know, so we kind of mixed even more culture into the mix. You know, why not? Why not?
It's
the international tiki. So that's kind of where the stuff all came from inside the bar.
Very cool. Why is rum like the, you know, the big spirit that you get in tiki bars?
So it all goes back to this guy named Don the Beachcomber. So Don the Beachcomber was. He labeled himself and was the rum ambassador of the whole world. He was selling the most rum. He worked with, just in his establishments, I don't have the exact figure on me, but it was the most in the world. He owned distribution companies. It went to all his businesses. He worked with Ray and Nephew to create rum. I mean, he was, so all of these influences, which all come from him, because he was the first one to make the first tiki bar. And that's why it was all predominantly rum. And a major player as well is, after Prohibition, which is when this was all starting,
right.
Rum was really cheap. And he was getting this rum, and then, you know, he was probably making hand over fist a lot of money off of this as well. And he grew up in his grandfather was a rum runner during Prohibition, and would run rum. And so he grew up going to Jamaica, going to tropical islands, and he used all this influence, so he knew his flavor, these flavors that he wanted to put in drinks as well, that mixed great with rum.
Right.
So he was just winning from day one as soon as he opened the bar. And that's where the rum comes from.
Okay. So you were the second tiki bar that opened in Paris.
Yes.
How do the French people take to it? Are they like totally on board now? Or are they like, I don't understand this concept. Why is it all tropical? Like, what's their feeling about it?
I think we've been very well received. I think one, I don't think a lot of people even really try to understand it. They, for me, they come in and they get this escapism vibe that everybody is looking for in their life sometimes. They get good cocktails, and I think I'm not sure, but I think a lot of people, that's just where it stops. They had a great night, they had some really great drinks. You know, the flavors that we make in Dirty Dick and a lot of other tiki bars, they're very tropical, and they're a lot different than you'd get in a lot of other bars in Paris, cocktail bars. And it's different. For like tiki files, I don't know if there is French tiki files, but there's not a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's we have a lot of an international crowd as well. But I think in France they get it, but they don't dig deeper into it. It's
just fun. It's good. It's fun.
They have a great time.
Yeah, we all like to escape a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's good. So, you know, we've got people like Ernest turned on the Beachcomber, Victor, Trader Vic. Do we have, if you were going to change your name to a tiki name, do you have anything in mind?
You could call me Young Coconut.
Young Coconut.
That would be my hip-hop name.
All right, I'm totally going to call you Young Coconut from now.
I think I'm just Scotty. I think that's just my tiki name, I guess. I don't know. I think that's kind of, Scotty Shooter is just kind of what it. That's what my mom called me, so I guess I never really got stuck with one of those.
Yeah.
Not yet anyway.
Alright. And is there anything else you want to tell us about the menu here? Do you think it's different here than it is in, you know, the way that you either handle the spirits or mix the flavors than it is in tiki bars in other countries?
So I think what we all strive for every day in Dirty Dick as our team here is of bartenders and barbacks. Amazing guys, is for us, there's no bullshits, meaning everything that we make is fresh. Every juice is pressed that day. All our syrups, you have about 13 syrups that are made fresh daily and get replenished when they are, as being a high volume cocktail bar. It's not easy to do. Our prep guy works 10 hours per day to prep the bar even before the barmen show up and do their two-hour prep.
Wow.
And that's per day it takes to get the Dirty Dick rolling.
Wow.
So I don't know what everyone else does, but I know for sure that we really, really pride ourselves on making everything homemade. And the spirits that we use are only the finest spirits. Our speed rack, our speed rail is only the finest alcohols in the world. And yeah, for us, that's why I said no bullshit, meaning No pasteurized juices, not that they're fake, but outside bought syrups and things like that, and cordials and whatever, we really pride ourselves on trying to do as much as we can, everything homemade, if we can.
Yeah, and it shows in the drinks. They've got, for listeners who haven't been, the drinks are really awesome here, so you should come down and try some. If somebody comes in here for the first time and they just don't really know what to order, what do you recommend for a newbie?
Mai Tai, Zombie, Painkiller. They're the staples. I think that's a great way to start.
And do you have, we were talking a little bit earlier about sort of modern tiki recipes. Do you have any sort of modern classics that have come out of Dirty Dick?
We have a lot, actually.
Why don't you tell me about your favorite one?
I have so many favorites, but I would say the Polynesian Remedy.
Yeah.
That's the one that we really try to bring around the country with us and just kind of show. It's a tropical twist on the penicillin cocktail. So it's made with homemade orja, honey, fresh ginger juice, and rum, of course. And then instead of instead of whiskey, and we use a dash of Laphroaig to make it smoky, but it's a smoky, sweet, great drink.
Yeah,
you have to try one of those too. That's the one we've kept on the menu in the 3 years from the menus that we've changed, but it's the one that we've kept to this day. Now the new menu's coming out soon. I don't know if it's going to be on it, but we've tried, but I don't know. We'll see what the team says about that.
Very good, very good. And do you have any projects coming up in the future that you can tell the listeners about?
It's been 3 years, and we've kind of been on hold. My business partners are very, very busy, busy people. But we should be looking to open a new bar by the end of the year. I've been looking in other cities in Europe, other cities in France, and there's maybe something in La Défense in the works as well, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
That one's just, we're going to check it out and see if it would work for us as a team, but hopefully by the end of the year we're actually looking to go to Bordeaux.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. There's a few cocktail things happening in Bordeaux.
A lot of people move down there, and I really love the city, and I think people would like us down there, hopefully.
Yeah. Cool. I hope that works out. It'll be nice to see Dirty Dick spreading a little bit.
And then by maybe next year we want to move to the States, if that's possible.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty cool, too.
It could be cool.
Yeah. I'd go and visit you in the States as well.
And we would love to have you.
Oh, thanks.
We make gin martinis.
Oh, perfect. Well, I think today I'm going to maybe have a little zombie at the bar after the interview because we're going to be talking about the zombie later on in this podcast. So I think it's maybe what I need to do today. So I won't take up more of your time. Well, at least not at the interview. I might still keep chatting with you at the bar. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
And for the listeners, we will put a link to the Dirty Dick Facebook page. You don't have a web page, right?
No.
We'll put a link to the Dirty Dick Facebook page so you can find the address. And if you haven't been down here, you really need to remedy that. Get down here. Have a drink, come visit this very cool team. All right, to the bar.
Let's go.
So I'm here at Rumfest, and I have the good fortune to be speaking with Bai Tiki. And Bai Tiki is an artist here. She is a painter, a sculptor. She does graphic arts. And the reason that we're speaking to her today is she also does tiki mugs. She is actually, I believe, the only person who is designing and putting out tiki mugs in France, which is very exciting. And also, her tiki mugs were on exhibition a few years back when we had the Tiki Pop exhibition at the Kay Branly. So she's got a lot of credibility when it comes to tiki mugs. Thank you, Bai, for taking the time to speak with me.
Hello, thank you very much.
So we're going to start off, and I just want to know from you what you think the necessary elements are in making a tiki mug. What's important?
Well, first of all, I think the tiki mug needs to help people who's going to the bar travel, and it needs to be tiki or something going with the theme of Hawaii, the pineapple, and all the things that all the people here is dreaming.
Yeah, makes them feel like they want to be on a beach.
Exactly.
Okay. Where do you get your inspirations from for your designs?
My inspiration comes from basically from some research that I make in the internet or books, mostly Svens Kirsten books. Or I have the opportunity to go very often to the Quai Branly. That's helped me a lot. And for my mug, for example, I do like when I have some client ask me to do their mug, I like them to just give me one word, like just one word, and I think about it, and normally what I like is that the people trust me on it, so they don't ask me at all what I'm gonna do.
Right.
So yeah, so the inspiration comes not necessarily when I start to sculpt. But when I have the feeling with the clay and all that stuff, it step by step I can see the tiki's coming
from
clay.
From inside the clay.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Yeah.
Why are tiki drinks better in tiki mugs?
For me, to have a tiki mug, it's a sign for people to be in the same group, like a secret society. Mm-hmm. You know, when you meet somebody that you don't know, and you see him with a tiki mug, you know that this guy is very interesting because he's the same. He is in the same ambiance, you know.
Yeah.
So you do understand what he's trying to tell you when okay. when he show his mug.
Yeah.
You know? And what I like, it's like the real tiki people love to share the and cheers with their mugs and each mug has been made by a different artist, and that for me it's just amazing for me. I mean, since I'm doing some mugs, to know that I have some mugs that say cheers in Hawaii or Australia, I mean, like, it's a little bit of me
traveling all over
Absolutely,
the world. It's
you know?
Nice and yeah. bringing happiness to
Voila.
People all over the world.
Exactly.
I like it. So when you make your tiki mugs, I just want to make sure I understand the process. So you speak to the people, you get a word,
voila.
And so then you sculpt them out of clay. And so then do you use that as a mold, and then you create more from that, or do you sculpt each one individually?
So it depends of the command. Before, I used to do only one of the kind, because I didn't know the process to do the mold and all that stuff. And then I made a lot of one of the kind that right now I'm like, oh my God, I wish that I knew how to do the mold to keep the design, you know. So now I know how to do it. So I do it at home. It's very complicated for me because I'm alone to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't have any help for it. So that's why my work is very slow. So some people are pretty not upset, but, you know, they are waiting for my answer. But I'm like, sorry, I cannot do...
You can only move as quickly as you
voila,
can move.
Voila,
yeah.
Exactly.
It takes time.
And beside this, recently I have some new clients, which are big clients, like alcohol and big company. And I have also to please them for this work and also for my regular clients. So yeah, it's quite
it's a hard balance.
Yeah, but I'm happy to do what I love to do, you know. So yeah,
it's always
I'm
nice
quite
to
lucky.
Do what you like to
I'm quite
do.
Lucky,
that's good.
Yeah.
Do you collect tiki mugs that
yeah,
other
some.
People make?
Yes. Yeah,
do you have any favorite designers?
Yes, I have one. It's Tiki Rob. Mm-hmm. Recently, I have a crush on his. What's his name again? I think it's the Kona mug.
Mm-hmm.
I love this design so much. I wish that I could do it, you know. when I first saw it, oh no, this is mine, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. I love his work, and I love also one guy from Europe named Jer Custom.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's from Switzerland, and he made a little coffee bob because. Like everybody loves a tiki bob, but he made a little coffee bob. It's very cute. I love it.
I'm gonna have to take a look at that. I'll look online and see if I can find some images.
Yeah.
Can you tell me anything special about tiki mug collectors? You must know a lot of people. So is there something interesting or funny or some common theme amongst them all?
No, I would say that my clients. I'm quite lucky that I have some people who follow me from the very beginning and asking me for one-of-a-kind things. So that's why I'm trying to do one-of-a-kind per year to please them. You know, I know that they want something unique. And, so that's the only thing that I can say about my clients. I have different kind of clients, and mostly my clients come from California and Hawaii. I'm amazed about that.
That's great.
Like,
I love
calm.
It.
And from Australia and I'm very, very happy for all this.
Do your friends here in France think it's strange what you do? Because tiki culture is not huge here. So how do they react? Do they say, what are these crazy
mugs? Totally. I've tried to work in some atelier in Paris because... I'm not a ceramist from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I was an illustrator. And when I start to sculpt tikis on the atelier, they were looking at me like, I'm crazy or what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I say, it's going to come someday. It's going to come, trust me. And now they start to understand, because now there's more and more bar in Paris, and they have mugs. Some have mugs in the bar. Yeah. So some people call me back and say, "Oh, I remember you were doing some tiki, and now I saw some bar having them," and blah blah blah. Say, so, see,
ah, I told you.
Yeah.
So I know that. Let's see, you've got mugs that are in Dirty Dick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have some mugs in the Tiki Lounge as well?
Tiki Lounge, yes.
And where else can people go if the listeners want to see your work in bars?
There's another restaurant bar in Bordeaux, mm-hmm. named Le Point Rouge.
Okay.
It's pretty new and very fashion, I would say. And there's a new, but I cannot tell you the client, but
okay.
I have a big client.
Oh, very exciting.
Asking me a mug for this hotel in Paris. Just amazing. You cannot believe it.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to find out in the
yeah.
future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the bar, the Forum, do they have some of your mugs as well? Did I see Bar Le Forum?
No.
All right. No. I must have been mistaken about that.
No.
Well, if you're listening, people from Bar Le Forum, you should get some of her mugs for your tiki drinks. Do you have
a
particular favorite tiki drink?
Yes, actually. I think it's very basic. I don't know. It's the Ancien Marina.
Yeah, it's good.
And yeah, I love this one.
Do you want to tell listeners what's in it?
I don't know.
Okay, that's all right.
I have no idea. I just love it.
That's a project for all of us. We're all going into the tiki bars of Paris now.
Absolutely.
And we're going to order one.
Yeah.
Well, I won't take up more of your time because I think we've got some rum drinking
mm-hmm.
to do here at
yep.
Rumfest. But I just want to say thank you very much for
thank
taking
you.
The time. And I know it's sometimes a challenge when I tell people we have to do it in English, but I'm super impressed. So thanks very much.
Merci beaucoup.
Bye.
Bye.
So I'm here at Rumfest. I'm with Alexandre Gabriel of the Maison Pierre Ferrand, which is very well known for cognac, but they also have a wide range of other spirits. They've got Citadel Gin, they've got a vodka, Curaçao, and Plantation Rum. And I'm here to talk to him about a very specific Plantation Rum, which is the Pineapple Rum. Thanks for taking the time to speak to me, Alexandre.
It's a pleasure to be here. Quite a show.
So we're talking about tiki this week, and I know that this rum wasn't necessarily developed for tiki, but I think there's a really nice marriage between pineapple rum, tiki. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about your pineapple rum?
Pineapple rum, that's interesting, came a little bit as a surprise to everyone. It was just a research for us that we're doing in the rum from yesteryears. You know, rum that, this is a project that I've worked with my dear friend Dave Wondrich, and we wanted to understand what was the typical Victorian pineapple rum, where it's called pineapple rum, but it's rum first and foremost because it's really the rum you feel, and in the background there's pineapple that's kind of tiptoeing in the drink, showing and just giving a certain twist. And so we researched all recipes, and I read a lot of them. David is an historian. He sent quite a few to me as well. And it really started to make sense to me when I saw that the in certain drinks a long time ago, the skin of the pineapple was used. And having done so much work with Curaçao and researched Curaçao for really literally 20 years, you know, we launched Pierre Ferrand Dry Curaçao.
Yeah.
I understand very well the way you can work with the skin. So we work with the skin of the orange for Curaçao. And I said, wow, if we get the right pineapple, we're going to make it sing. Not only by using the flesh that we infuse in the dark rum, but to use the skin that we infuse in the plantation tree stars and we distill to just capture the perfume from the skin. So the only problem, you really had to get the right pineapple. I'm a farmer from France. I didn't know necessarily all that much about pineapple. So we studied pineapple for 3 months. Every breakfast, pineapple. And we tried pineapple. You know me, I'm a bit obsessive.
Yeah.
Tried pineapple. And we settled for one called the Victoria pineapple, which is a pineapple that grows in Mauritius and the Reunion Island. That's tiny. That's got this super, super aromatic skin. And when I smell something, I don't know if you read the book Le Parfum, you
I
know
did,
where
yes,
the,
I know exactly
the,
what you're
my hero
about.
Is Grenouille.
Yes.
You know, the guy, poor guy, he's a bit evil at the end. I hope I'm not evil like this, but he can smell something and dream about what he can do with it, and I that's why he's my hero. And when I smelled this pineapple, much like Grenouille, I knew I could do something incredible by using the skin that's infused and distilled and blending it with the dark rum in which the flesh has been infused. And then the two is blended together at the end of the process. So you got that big generous taste from the flesh and you got this fantastic aromatics from the skin. And that's the first time in 150 years that it was done. As you know, Charles Dickens was fanatic about pineapple rum, so much that he created a character called Reverend Stiggins in the Pickwick Paper.
Right.
And that's why we call that pineapple rum Stiggins Fancy, in honor to, you know, of course, Charles Dickens, but to this fictional character called Reverend Stiggins, who was preaching abstinence, being drunk on pineapple rum. So somebody will like about his flaw, you know, enjoying the good stuff. So that's what we did with pineapple rum. But to tell you the truth, we never thought we were going to launch it. We made a couple barrels. We said one for us, because we like to drink the good stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And then the other one for our friends at Tales of the Cocktails, you know, the Caps, the Apprentice. And they work for free and they work real hard. And I'm always doing lectures there. And they're such a great support. And David as well has thought the same way. So we wanted to give to each of them a bottle that we both signed as like a collection piece. But we didn't realize that we took the genie out of the bottle, so to speak, because all these guys are fanatic about great
Everybody
spirits.
Wants it now.
And they shared it with everyone where they went back to their bars. And now we just slightly, we decided to launch it. Even one day, I don't see my wife quite often because she wants me to, she doesn't want to live with me in Cognac and she thinks I'm too intense. So when we see each other, one day I'm reading in bed and she says, "You got to make more than a pineapple rum, right?" I'm like, "Oh, no, no, not in my bed. We're not talking this." So finally, the pressure was such and I was excited about it. We decided to do another batch and then another batch. It will always be limited because we peel the pineapples, we do everything by hand. And I insist on this, it can only be done in season when the pineapple is fully mature. So off season, there's no rum. So it's just, we do it twice a year and that's it.
And so if listeners want to try this, where can they find it?
That's
where could I find it? I don't have a bottle.
You know, I thought I was going to make a lot of friends with this. I make friends, but some not friends. Today, people say, "Where can I get the pineapple? There's so little available." I know some stores now are listing it, like Marks & Spencer in the UK. The US was the first one we made it available to because Curaçao, we did Europe first. And they were like, we got heard a lot of, you know, because we progressively made more Curaçao. So we started with the U.S. So it's U.S. on the internet. You can probably still find some when it's in season.
Right.
And you know, like all artisanal products, they're very limited. They can only be made like that. So where to find it? As a producer, I don't even know. I only have probably like 20 bottles at my home, and that's it. And that's all available because the minute it's produced, we want our friends to have some.
Okay, good. Well, maybe I'll try to get myself invited back down there again soon.
We'll send you one for you for
it. Okay. How do you recommend that people drink it if they get their hands on a bottle?
Well, you see, I'm adamant of one thing. I know what is my talent. I hope I have some, but my limitations. I'm not a bartender, and I tell the bartenders, go and dream with it.
Yeah.
Look, this is just dug out of history. I love to drink it straight, personally. I love putting it in an ice cube. But people have done incredible tiki drinks with it. Incredible tiki drinks. You know, so we're just discovering. We're opening a new era with that product that was not drank all these years.
I'd say, did we have it in a daiquiri when
it's
I was
delicious
down there not
in
too
a
long ago?
Yeah, it's
yeah,
delicious
yeah.
in
that
a daiquiri.
That was really good.
It's delicious.
Okay.
But as you can imagine, this is just needs to be revisited. And I always say to the bartenders, I'm building the violin and they play the music. So,
like
you know,
that.
My goal is to hopefully build the Stradivarius and for them to play it well. And respecting the instrument, obviously, but making great music with it.
Great. I'm not going to take up more of your time because I know you need to get home, but I will be bothering you for another episode because I know you have lots of knowledge about lots of interesting things. So thank you.
Thank you so
much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And now it's cocktail time. This is the part of the show where we give you a cocktail recipe that's based on the show's theme so you can have some fun and make it for yourself at home. For today's recipe, I look to Jeff Beach Bum Berry's site for inspiration. Beach Bum Berry has some substantial cocktail cred. He was named one of Imbibe magazine's 25 most influential personalities of the past century. He's written 6 books on vintage tiki drinks, and he's often referred to as a leading world expert on rum and on mixology. The New York Times has also called him the Indiana Jones of tiki drinks. Beach Bum Berry talks about Don the Beachcomber's original 1934 recipe for the zombie. Berry put a lot of work into uncovering the original zombie recipe, which was a mystery for many years. Don didn't write down the recipe by ingredients, but with numbers, which indicated the corresponding bottles that were also numbered on the bar that should be used. The bottles had no other labels or any other indication of what was inside. But thanks to Beach Bum Berry's drink detective work, I can now share the recipe with you today, and I'll put links in the show notes to his site so you can read in more detail about the drink, its history, and how he uncovered the mystery of making the original. So if you want to make one at home, what you want to do is combine 3/4 of an ounce fresh lime juice, 1/2 ounce falernum, 1.5 ounces each of gold Puerto Rican rum and gold or dark Jamaican rum, 1 ounce 151 proof lemon heart demerara rum, 1 teaspoon grenadine, 6 drops Pernod, a dash of Angostura bitters, and 1/2 ounce of Don's Mix. Don's Mix is 2 parts grapefruit juice to 1 part cinnamon-infused sugar syrup, and I'll also put links to some sites in the show notes where you can get a more detailed recipe on how to make that at home. You put all of this mix into an electric blender with 6 ounces or 3/4 cup crushed ice, then you blend it at high speed for no more than 5 seconds. You pour it into a tall glass, you top it off with ice cubes, and you garnish it with a mint sprig. Be warned, this is a kick-your-ass kind of strong cocktail, so enjoy it in moderation. Cheers! That's it for today. I hope you enjoyed today's Tiki Talk. We'll be doing a second episode in upcoming weeks, so keep an eye on the podcast for that. And thanks to Alexandra, Bai, and Scotty for taking the time to talk to us. We'll put links to them and their projects in the show notes. Thanks to Emily Dilling, who edits and produces the podcast. And if you don't know, Emily also has her own podcast connected to her blog, Paris Paysan. So you should give it a listen, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Thanks to Sun Little for the show's theme music. And also, we're going to be adding a comment section to the show notes, so now you have a place to leave comments, questions, or start conversations about the show's themes. And in between episodes, don't forget to check out the blog at www.52martinis.com. And until next time, cheers!